Good morning, everyone. I hope everyone enjoyed their Thanksgiving. We'll get started. And I'm very happy to have two speakers here this morning. So we have Sam Gordon here, who is the Director of Planning and Zoning for the Town of DeWitt. He's responsible for the management of the development process within the town, implementation of the town's comprehensive plan, and coordination of town sustainability initiatives. Sam has over 15 years' experience in the planning and sustainability fields and has managed and/or provided consulting expertise on a variety of projects from greenway planning, energy conservation, and renewable energy. He has also been involved in neighborhood revitalization and alternative mobility projects. Sam developed and oversees Moving DeWitt to improve the bicycle and pedestrian environment within the town, and in 2015 launched Elevating Erie, an initiative to close the gap in the Erie Canal Trailway system within Central New York. Joe Sisko is the founding partner of Locus, a hybrid consultancy that uses design and storytelling to build support for ideas that have a positive social, cultural, and economic impact. Locus helps cities and organizations stand out and facilitate change by visually explaining their ideas with clarity and style. Previously, he was an assistant director of Upstate at the Syracuse University School of Architecture, where he initiated and managed public space, master planning and research projects from concept through public engagement and into implementation. Please join me in welcoming Joe and Sam.
Well, good morning. We're really pleased to be here with you this morning to share an overview of the Elevating Erie project. I'm Sam Gordon. I'm here with Joe Sisko. And we're going to provide you with an overview this morning of what's been a collaborative project between the town of DeWitt and the city of Syracuse. Originally, actually, Owen Kearney from the city of Syracuse was scheduled to be here presenting this morning. And some of you may know Owen is engaged in the update of the city zoning ordinance, which is a pretty big project. And it just so happens that they've got some major stakeholder meetings going on this week, and he wasn't able to join us this morning. But Owen has been, and the city has really been an integral part of this project as it's developed. So the project itself is really about the long-term reimagining of what is a critically important historical corridor within our region. And I imagine that most of you are familiar, at least in some fashion, with the history of the Erie Canal. It's perhaps one of the most important public infrastructure investments in human history. The canal spanned the upstate New York cities of Albany, Syracuse, Rochester, and Buffalo, and connected the Great Lakes system to the Hudson River and New York City. The corridor has been designated as a National Heritage Corridor. And for many decades, the state of New York has been working through the New York State Canal Corporation and other partners to complete what's called the Erie Canalway Trail System. When the canal was finished in 1825 between Buffalo and Albany, at that point it cost about $7 million to construct, and it created thousands of jobs. Nearly two centuries later, the canal still plays a significant role in our economy and really the way of life in upstate New York. And not only does it serve now as a recreational and commercial waterway, but much of the towpath of the legendary canal has been transformed into a 360-plus mile Erie Canalway Trail. The trail is estimated to have an annual traffic volume of almost 1.6 million visits per year. And overall, visitor spending along the trail generates approximately $253 million in sales, has created over 3,000, almost 3,500 jobs, provides $78 million in labor income, and provides almost $30 million in taxes to the upstate economy each year. Bicycling now is the second most common form of outdoor recreation in the United States, according to a recent study by the Outdoor Foundation, with over 60 million Americans enjoying that activity. More Americans bicycle than golf, ski, and play tennis combined. Bicycling is now the third most common vacation activity in the United States. When complete, the Canalway Trail system will extend from Albany to Buffalo, and at 360 plus miles will become the longest continuous bicycle and pedestrian trail in North America. There are multiple gaps in the trail system, and while not the longest, there's a 14-mile gap in central New York between Camillus and DeWitt, and it's arguably the most difficult to close. It's also in its current state, this gap in our region, is one of the most hated and treacherous experiences along the entire length of the Canalway Trail. Our regional MPO, the Syracuse Metropolitan Transportation Council, recently completed a study that was focused on closing the gap within central New York between Camillus and DeWitt. And there are multiple partners in the region that have been working, I would say somewhat quietly, behind the scenes to begin to put the pieces of the Canalway Trail system together. So, for example, Onondaga County has been working in cooperation with the New York State Fair, the Onondaga Lake Cleanup Project, the City of Syracuse, and others to start working on connections on the west side through some of Honeywell's property along the... they're working on the redesign of Bridge Street and Solvay to incorporate the trail, would use the State Fairgrounds pedestrian bridge system that goes over 690 to connect to the lakefront, follow the southwest shore of the lake where Honeywell is completing their remediation project. Some of you may remember the county took a property by eminent domain, the former Roth Steel property on the lake shore. That's intended to become part of both the Loop the Lake Trail system and the Canalway Trail. And then follow the Onondaga Creek Walk along Water Street out to the Erie Boulevard East Corridor. This is what Erie Boulevard looks like today. It's an auto-centric, six-lane boulevard that, as you know, has a lot of commercial strip shopping destinations, and it connects the city of Syracuse and the town of DeWitt. Bicycle and pedestrian accommodations along this corridor are lacking or non-existent altogether. And it has very low aesthetic or visual quality of any kind, and it has no reference whatsoever to the important history of the corridor.
So this is where our project comes in. There were a lot of conversations clearly happening at the state level and larger about closing the Canalway Trail gaps. Nobody was really talking about it locally. But even more importantly, nobody was talking about Erie Boulevard in general. We all just kind of accept it as this lost cause of whatever the heck we want to call it, from Syracuse to DeWitt. And so we wanted to spark a conversation and a discussion about, yes, the historic value of the canal, and yes, closing the gaps, but we wanted it to, it couldn't just be about a bike lane, right, running down Erie Boulevard. It had to be about something bigger. We wanted to sort of spur a conversation about what's possible, what do we deserve? Do we really deserve 8 lanes or 6 to 8 lanes, depending on where you are on it? 260 feet of asphalt, barreling its way through our town and our city. Is that what we really deserve? How do we get people to start thinking big? How do we start making decisions that are making positive impacts for the next generation? So we sought to jumpstart that conversation in a different way, because I think if there's anything we've learned from 81, that is that if you start a conversation with one, two, or three options, you're most certainly going to divide the community, right? Everybody's either going to love one, hate one, and you start people off in silos and camps. So we wanted to start it a little bit differently. We wanted to start with a sort of plethora of ideas. So we decided to host an international ideas competition. We wanted people from all over the world to come in and give us their fresh thinking, innovative ways of looking at this particular challenge that's really relevant to a lot of other places in the world. And we wanted them to help us to create a framework for ways that we can think about this corridor that are restorative, but more importantly, transformative for our community, for our region. And so, you know, this is not really a new concept. Decades ago, a similar sort of conversation started in New York City around an elevated rail line. I'm sure most of you are familiar with the High Line today. But that really started as some community members who went up on this elevated rail line that was derelict, and it was, you know, going to be torn down. It was devastating communities at the time. And they said, this could really be an asset if we think about it in a different way. And if any of you have been to the High Line, you can see the sort of economic impact that it's had on, you know, both properties for, you know, blocks around it in either direction. And it's really transformed the West Side all the way up to the Hudson Rail Lines, which are, you know, now going to be one of the largest development projects in the world. And of course, we're not New York City, but there are lessons to be learned from how to think about our infrastructure in ways that can be positive forces rather than just ways of life. So we sought to elevate the role of Erie to that of a positive force. You know, we really wanted to think of it as a generator of value and not just as, you know, as I said, as a lost cause. So we created a brand for the competition, something that could elicit a sort of positive vision for the future. You know, we built it up as really more of an action, you know, elevating Erie. And we broadcast it and branded it, and we marketed it all over the country. We did these posters and sent them to every design school in the U.S. We purchased digital advertising, and we marketed on countless design websites and competition clearinghouses. And, you know, then at that point, we had to set a framework for what we were asking people to do. You know, what were we after? And there was five things. You know, the first is stimulate a healthy urban corridor. Two, enhance biodiversity and create habitat. This was kind of our interesting twist on a common problem. Establish recreation, promote economic growth, and develop multimodal connectivity. And so it's kind of a heavy lift for an ideas competition. It's a lot to ask people to think about. But we felt that it was important to have all of those elements, at least in some way, represented so that we could think about it as a community, you know, what are the things that are most important to us? So at that point, we really just had to sit back and wait and let the entries come in, and they did. You know, we had nearly 70 entries from 16 countries around the world, and as we'd hoped, we received all kinds of ideas that could help form the basis of community discussion. You know, what's possible along this corridor, and ultimately, what should we set as our goals and our priorities? Not what's the design that we're going to build, but what do we think has value here, and what should we be looking to do with our next steps? We asked a distinguished jury, complete with, you know, a large jury, with, you know, international design experts, with ecology experts, with local business owners, local political representatives, transportation experts, a whole host of people that could look at each of the entries with a sort of critical lens of their own expertise. And submissions were submitted in four categories. We had, of course, the overall boulevard category or site, which I'll talk about in detail. We had the branch, the block, and the bridge, because who doesn't like a good alliteration? And then we allowed entries to, they all had to submit to the boulevard. They all had to look at the entire project at this sort of large-scale scope. It's a big problem. We had to look at it in its entirety. But then each of the teams could zero in and focus a little bit more detail at a series of these three sites that you see in the sort of white blocks. along the route. So the boulevard itself starts at the terminus of the Kanawha Trail in DeWitt, right next to City Hall, leaps over 481 in some fantastic manner, cuts up Towpath Road, and where it intersects with Erie Boulevard today around Widewaters, and then runs up Erie Boulevard in the town and then into the city all the way down to Beach Street. So that's a lot of territory, right? The winner of this category was a team called B Percent. They designed this multi-use, diverse roadway that no longer prioritizes cars, but it's more about creating equal realms for pedestrians, for animal habitats, for recreation, commercial mixed-use development, all while celebrating the historic value of the canal in a way that's modern, that's not just, you know, let's make it what it was. The first sort of zoomed in site is the block. And as you saw on the larger diagram, this is in the city side of the competition area. It spans really two blocks. And as you'll see in each of the categories, we gave the teams the chance to work on a piece of private property so that they could say, all right, well, if I were to envision a new piece of infrastructure, what kind of impact would that have on future development? What would that maybe look like, just speculatively? So the winner to this category was actually also B Percent. They kind of cleaned house. And they took the approach that you can still have a sort of historic value, you can still have water, but you can do it in a more subtle way, in a more sort of elegant way that also allows for recreation, that allows for sort of multiple uses that are flexible, that aren't just this is what it's used for and that's only what it's used for. So the branch, this is actually the only place on Erie Boulevard where the canal still exists, and you would never know it. You know, you probably drive by this all the time, and if you didn't know it was there, next time you drive past that area, try to look for it. It's kind of like behind the weeds, but it's there. And so we were asking people to deal with this sort of fairly large water feature and the scale of sort of small scale, low volume towpath road and how that might intersect with large scale, high volume Erie Boulevard. And the winner here, again, thinking sort of big, is taking this idea of, you know, what if we want to call prominence to it, and we want to sort of elevate it in a visual way from Erie Boulevard and connect it both literally and physically, and create a sort of use for it that is integrated into the water. So it's like a museum and a sort of natural wildlife habitat zone and park and all sorts of other things that are interesting. So the bridge, this is maybe one of the more challenging sites as you've got, you know, both elevation changes and you've got to get over 481 and do it in a way that, you know, isn't demonstratively, wow, I can't say that word today, cost prohibitive, but you all know what I mean, largely. So the winner here actually said, forget that, you know, bridges are expensive, you know, it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. What if we followed the historic route of the canal, went under the highway, and created a sort of seamless experience in that way so that you don't really have to look down on cars at all, take them out of the equation in a sense. So after the jury had selected the winners, we went through obviously several rounds of scoring. It was a multi-week process. We uploaded everything to the website. You can still go on there today and kind of troll through and look at all the entries. And then we designed and built a public exhibition where we housed it at the Erie Canal Museum for 4 months. And we had a big opening. And one of the key pieces of the exhibition is that we built into it the ability to start tabulating or collecting information and feedback from the public. So we built in this tool called MetroQuest, which you'll see on the right there. It's two touchscreen computers that allowed us to ask a series of questions about what do you think about these ideas? What do you think about this concept in particular? Not necessarily what it looks like, but what it's representing. And we not only had it in the exhibition, but it was hosted on the website. So we branded that and broadcast it all over the place. Got lots of entries or submissions. And so that tool was really critical in soliciting feedback from the public on ideas that we received, helping determine priorities, helping to get people excited about what could happen. And we went outside the normal realms of engagement, and we got billboards because it's a transportation project, and people drive cars. So we also, you know, did Facebook advertising and, you know, all the other sort of like digital realm things as well. We carefully cultivated the local media to tell our story. You know, why were we doing what we were doing? What we were doing? Why was it so important? What were we hoping to achieve? And that went a long way in helping us to cultivate a considerable amount of coverage and positive coverage, positive responses as well. Not the sort of typical, why are we wasting time and money looking at streets and roads in Syracuse again? You know, who cares? We've got bigger problems. We held a series of pop-up meetings and sessions like this at the regional market. You know, and it's this kind of engagement that, you know, people could come and see, you know, where they might not otherwise, you know, become aware of the project, like on Facebook or something, and they realized, well, I can spend 5 minutes and I can sort of have an impact on the decision-making process or setting the direction for both the Canalway Trail system, Erie Boulevard, you know, all these sort of big ideas. Scheduled a variety of community organizations to speak at, sort of like this. You know, green advocates groups, community visioning, Rotary Club. We also solicited for presentations at unlikely places, such as the Hiscock Legal Society annual meeting. And early on, we launched the website as elevatingerie.com, and it was really the sort of housing warehouse for the competition materials, you know, everything that an entrant had to submit, what was the background, what's the brief, all that kind of important stuff that you need for a competition. And then we realized that there was this potential to transform that site into a platform that could really keep the project moving. So we incorporated social media into the site, set up a blog. Of course, it still has all the design submissions, but it's also a place for frequently asked questions. It's a place to showcase all the media attention, and it's going to continue to be the home of the project updates and communication as we continue to move forward, as you'll see in the sort of next steps. So over the course of 3 months that the survey was open, it amassed over 3,500 visitors from 38 U.S. states and 50 countries across the globe. Right? That's crazy. I don't like. And I mean, particularly for a public infrastructure project in a sort of mid-sized city in a town, that's a staggering number of people. And of those 3,500 people and 50 countries around the world, we had almost 1,300 fully completed surveys that we collected data from. And I'll let Sam walk you through what we learned from all that.
So what did we learn? Well, we asked people a variety of questions in the survey itself that would help us to understand what people felt the future priorities for the corridor should be. Participants were asked to rank priorities for the corridor. They answered survey questions related to those rankings. And we also asked them to rank various images that had and concepts that had come in through the ideas competition. And these were things that between the city and the town, some of our jurors, and Joe and other partners, we sort of curated and self-selected images that we felt were most compelling and that we wanted to pursue as we move forward. So when asked what component of community character needed the most improvement, for example, along the corridor, about a quarter of participants responded that they'd like to see a more attractive streetscape. that would be desirable. And I can tell you from my work with the town, this is something that we hear on a regular basis from property owners and business owners, that the boulevard is ugly. Some of them have invested millions of dollars in upgrading their properties, and they've got an asphalt median out in front of them that has weeds growing out of it all year long. So it really is an important concern. It's not just an aesthetic thing. The business owners are saying, we want to see our investment matched in this transportation corridor. 55% of participants said that green infrastructure, such things like more trees, innovative stormwater management practices would be important elements of an eco-friendly design that could benefit the corridor. 40% of participants stated that they'd like to see protected bike lanes and that would be something that could make this corridor feel safer. 35% of participants responded that they'd like to see mixed-use development along the corridor, and this is something that the town is working. We're actually working on updating our zoning as the city's updating their zoning to make things like mixed-use development easier to do. 35% of participants suggested that they'd like to see trail systems incorporated along the historical route of the canal. And that's also something that the town of DeWitt has been engaged in building, not only looking at the Elevating Erie project. There's also something called the Orville or Butternut Feeder Canal that extends all the way down to Jamesville Reservoir. And we're currently working on designing and constructing a trail system that will follow that corridor. About a third of participants also said that we should provide better access to historic features along this corridor. So Joe mentioned what we've been calling the Wide Waters Pond at the end of Towpath Road by the old country club or Uncle Sam's, or there's a few other words for that property, ugly, vacant, derelict property. So that's also something that we're working on, is trying to figure out how do we reveal aspects of the historical canal that still exists within our community. And the other thing that is I think interesting is almost three quarters of respondents said that they'd like to see some form or forms of enhanced or improved transit service along this corridor. We also think that that's an important consideration as we move forward in re-envisioning this historical corridor in our community. As I said, we had participants in the survey also rank some of the images or concepts and ideas that came in through the competition. One of the most highly ranked ideas that came in through the competition through the survey was for creating a median greenway down the center of Erie Boulevard. And we sort of have that already in the city of Syracuse. You have a wide median, but it's not programmed space. Nothing happens there. It's just a place to maybe plow snow in the wintertime or maybe collect garbage in the summertime. But we don't use it actively, and there's nothing there to tell you that that used to be the Erie Canal. There is one monument, but you kind of have to know what you're looking at to know that that monument is to the Erie Canal. So we've started looking at some of these ideas. This is Erie Boulevard today. We have hired a firm that's helping us to do some kind of transportation a feasibility analysis. What are the kinds of things that we could do along Erie Boulevard to incorporate this median trail concept? This is just a preliminary sort of sketch of what could be possible along the corridor. We have actually presented this idea to New York State DOT. They actually own Erie Boulevard East. And they think that this is actually really, they find that this is a compelling, not just a compelling idea, but a technically feasible approach to the future of Erie Boulevard. What's included in here is reducing the number of travel lanes. So right now there's three lanes in either direction. This is showing two lanes in either direction. expanding in from the outsides to include new sidewalks and street trees, and then providing a protected space in the middle that people could use for bicycling, running, walking, and be able to navigate safely this historical corridor within the community. What I found most interesting about this is right now that those six lanes, actually Erie Boulevard was conceived of before 690 was built. So the capacity that was designed into Erie Boulevard was, it was anticipating a much more traffic than actually uses it today. If we were to remove a travel lane in either direction, it would actually have no impact on traffic service, right? So the transportation experts use this terminology of level of service, and they pay very close attention to the level of service numbers. So we've had our consultant run those numbers to say what were the impacts of this potential transformation of the boulevard have, and there would be no appreciable impact from the users. So again, this is existing conditions, proposed conditions moving forward. And also, as I said, to complement the work that we're doing to look at how we could redesign the boulevard or what things we could do with the boulevard, we're also working on the town's end with our zoning code to update that so that it makes it easier to have the other types of investment that we would like to see along the corridor, including mixed-use development. Another idea that people found really compelling was the idea of revealing the canal in some way. And equally, we had an image of that Widewaters Pond area in the town. And people also found that that was a compelling idea. So we are working on one of the next things that we're going to be doing this spring. One of the competition entrants, the group called Object Territories, they were actually the winner of the bridge project. They had the anti-bridge proposal. We're working to bring them to the community this coming spring to do a series of public engagement events around that Widewaters Pond to get more ideas from the public about what we could do there. And we've set aside, these are some of the ideas that came in. Maybe that could be an ice skating area. That was one of the competition entries, or a place to view wildlife or that sort of thing. But we're gonna be doing more work with that this spring. Another idea for the bridge over 481 was this concept of an eco bridge. This is something that we're working with our consultant now to look at what the feasibility of this might be. There are many examples of bridges like this that have been built across the country, so it has been done. We also have a studio from ESF, an engineering studio that's working with us, going to be working with us this spring. And they are, one of the things that they're looking at is connecting the canal way that still exists along Towpath Road to the water that's still in the Erie Canal. So can we make a hydrologic connection between those two things? Which is the idea that the anti-bridge really sparked in us. Okay, actually we could actually rewater this section and make it feel more like it's still the Erie Canal. We have been working diligently to line up funding and bring funding together on the town's end of this project to continue to move things forward. So this, a lot of what we're showing you now is concept development, but we do have almost $300,000 in capital funds to use towards implementing something at the Widewaters Pond. We've submitted additional grant applications for more to continue the planning process forward with the Towpath Road corridor. And we just submitted a transportation alternatives program application for Towpath Road itself, which is a town-owned facility, to begin to construct this component of the Canalway Trail in the town. We're also looking at federal resources, and hopefully this program still exists next year. I don't think any of us know, but Tiger funds were used for the Connective Corridor project. Rochester has used them for their Inner Loop project. If any of you have followed that, they're actually filling in a portion of the Inner Loop. And we think that this corridor can be a highly competitive on a national basis for that type of funding. And we're also talking to other, the Central New York Community Foundation actually has provided some support for the exhibition that we held. We're talking to other local private foundations, but we're also starting to look to national foundations to support some of this work as we move forward. It's really important. When we started this process, we felt that we kind of needed a defibrillator for this portion of our historic of our heritage. It's been buried for over 100 years. We are actually coming up on the bicentennial. Next year begins the bicentennial celebration of the Erie Canal. And we wanted to use this process to kind of jumpstart our collective minds to realize that this is an asset worthy of our attention. And as Joe mentioned, this isn't the first time that this kind of thinking has been successful. The Highline Project, that was a piece of neglected, forgotten infrastructure that's been reimagined and has become one of the most highly visited places in New York City. It's led to the largest real estate project in the world in the Hudson Yards redevelopment. There's another example, another struggling city in upstate New York, Poughkeepsie. They have something called the Walkway Over the Hudson. This began in a similar way. People started thinking, we've got this bridge that caught on fire that people want to tear down, but maybe we could do something more interesting with it. And now it's become a major tourist destination along the Hudson River. It connects, I think, to over 40 miles of rail trail on either side of the Hudson. And there's lots of other examples of the creative exploration and implementation of bike and ped projects that are helping to transform communities. This is an example from Chicago that has actually a covered system, so taking into consideration the elements in the wintertime, similar climate in Chicago. They're also looking at incorporating solar panels on the top. Some of you may know that the New York State Canal Corporation is transitioning to be under the New York Power Authority, so maybe they might be interested in doing something cool like this along the canal corridor in our community. Another example, this is a bike and pedestrian trail in Brisbane, Australia. They've got this really cool sculptural element that has a flowering vine on it that helps you to identify that you're a part of that corridor. So this is where we're trying to get to come up with a spark or an idea. We don't just want this to be a trail. It should be a trail that says something about who we are. So at the underlying this whole project is what is uniquely Syracuse, and how do we tell our story and our heritage along this corridor in a way that really brings us forward and creates a space that we can be proud of for the future.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, Sam. I don't know if you've been so busy on this that you haven't paid any attention to I-81. But the plans I've seen indicate that some of the thinking of that is going to interfere with the development of the Erie Canal pathway. And I wonder if the two groups are having any liaison with each other and are being nice with each other.
The short answer is yes. We are aware of the interface between whatever happens with 81 and what we're looking to do with the canal corridor. And it's not just the town, but also the city and New York State DOT have been, if you look at the visions that they're showing, especially the viaduct corridor, they all include a provision for the Canalway Trail as part of that. So it is part of the discussion. The intent is, once you get into the city, is that the Canalway Trail will follow Water Street until you get to the Creek Walk, and then it would go north. And that has been included in the proposal so far.
I've been waiting to make this point or ask this question for a long time because this is really close to my heart. But in terms of the culture and the history of the Erie Canal Path through Syracuse, it's always struck me, being a longtime resident, that there are still structures along that path, that blueprint of a path, that memory of a path, of buildings that were there when the canal ran through Syracuse. Mm-hmm. And some of these buildings are in terrible shape, but I can still see them. I can see the doors on the second floor, you know, where the barge is unloaded. And mm-hmm. I'm sitting here with Dennis from the Historical Society, so I'm interested in getting this point to him too. But wouldn't it be important for branding of this project to even just label or in some way foreground the buildings that still exist along that path and get a little of that history incorporated? And I guess my question is, do any of these designs involve either rehabilitating or tearing down those historic structures?
Yeah, so first I think it's important to recognize that we don't have a final design for the corridor. What we began with was lots of conceptual ideas of what could happen along the corridor. One of the groups that submitted a book of a whole collection of ideas of things that should happen or could happen along the corridor. And a lot of that was focused on what you're talking about, is making sure that we're preserving historical assets and bringing them forward to the future. And, you know, one such complex is the one on Townsend Street, just in the kind of shadows of the 81 Viaduct, which I'm sure there are other people in the room that are personally concerned about what is going to happen with that complex as the bricks fall off of it and such. I think it's critically important to provide the economic space where those buildings become relevant again. And that's part of what we're trying to do. We would like the community collectively to rediscover this heritage in a way that makes it valuable, so that it's not the bricks aren't falling off, but we're figuring out how to put them back in and make those buildings and properties relevant again.
Good morning. I'm Pam with Leadership Greater Syracuse. First, I commend you for your vision. I'm so thankful that we have people who are thinking very positively and very big in our community. We may not get everything that we dream of. I'm just curious, too, if you're building into your plan for whatever we end up getting down the road, a maintenance-type stuff, because I know sometimes you do this great stuff, and I'd love to see this sustained forever.
Yeah. Joe and I had this conversation yesterday, or 2 days ago. Yes, that's definitely something that we're thinking of. And this discussion, I'm sure some of you may still be stinging from this discussion as it took place along the Connective Corridor project. In the town of DeWitt, we do have, for example, enabling legislation to develop a business improvement district. And one of the ideas that we've been exploring is creating a business improvement district or something called a BID along the Erie corridor in the town so that we could get some dedicated funding to do this. But there's a variety of ways that this might happen, and I don't think we have an answer yet. If you take the High Line as an example, that has actually, there's a Friends of the High Line group that actually owns the infrastructure. They're responsible for its long-term maintenance. It's not a public park. It's a private space, actually. So that's a potential option. With the example of the walkway over the Hudson, that actually became a New York State park. And that's now the responsibility of the state to maintain. So that could happen here. We do have, for example, the old Erie Canal Historic Park that goes from DeWitt to Rome. That's under the guise of the New York State Parks Department. They have the responsibility for maintenance. Maybe we expand that park and have it extend down the Erie Boulevard East Corridor as part of the Canalway Trail. That's an option. I don't have a solution right now, but I think those are some of the things that we need to explore as we move forward.
There is a park in the middle of a road for about 2 or 3 miles in Guadalajara. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's the same thing. They've taken a huge highway, put this park in the middle of it like your median walkway, but they've incorporated things like playground, adult exercise equipment, and it goes for several miles. And it is a park. Mm-hmm. The problem was, for us, getting from, you have to cross a lot of cross streets. So if you're biking or walking or pushing a, you know, baby, you've got to stop and wait for a light. What are your thoughts there? And are you thinking of that as a park?
Yeah, so again, some of the ideas that came in through the competition, in fact, one of the winning entries for the block site in the city was to activate that space. They had images of ping pong tables and monkey bars and that sort of stuff in the center median. So that is part of the discussion. We also are looking at, in the town, along Erie Boulevard East, the canal corridor went from what is now the intersection of, roughly the intersection of Bridge Street and Erie Boulevard to Thompson Road. That's the segment that's in the town. We have, with our consultant, looked at a variety of different ways that you can incorporate the Canalway Trail. It just so happens that the route with the least amount of conflicts for cyclists or pedestrians or runners or babies in carriages is in the middle, because once you get into the middle, there's only really one interruption between Bridge Street and Thompson Road, and that's Empire Plaza and what's unfortunately named DeWitt Town Center. So that's the only light that you'd have to wait for. The Thompson Road intersection itself is a very busy intersection. It's the busiest along this whole stretch. We did talk with New York State DOT about, could you put a bridge in there? And what might that look like? And there's lots of really cool examples of bridges around the world that have been done for this kind of purpose. So that is a primary concern. This route, we feel, for successful, it's not going to just be used by local people, but it's also going to be used by people that are traveling from Albany to Buffalo or Buffalo to Albany. And we feel that it's really important to provide a safe, relatively uninterrupted experience. We also felt that it is critical that experience follow the historical route of the canal to the extent possible, and that it be, if we're going to make a significant investment in the community, that it be in our, what I would say, be in our front yard. So there had in the past been discussion about building this system between 690 and Erie Boulevard, in what's a national grid right-of-way. There's lots of wetlands and brownfields in that area. And it's kind of our backyard. It's not a place that most of us probably have ever been. And it doesn't, I don't think, support not just the businesses along that corridor, but if you think about Erie Boulevard, there are residential neighborhoods that line the entire length of Erie Boulevard from the town of DeWitt into the city of Syracuse. And we feel that making this investment closer to those neighborhoods is a key, an important piece to help to connect the residents of those neighborhoods to the corridor itself.
Thank you. From what I understand, the World Canals Conference is coming to Syracuse this fall. Mm.
And that's going to bring canal aficionados from around the world to Syracuse. But I haven't heard a word about what's being planned to show that group and how this event can be leveraged for this project and for our community in general. Are you part of the planning for that? I think it's the Canal Heritage Corridor group that was able to win bringing that conference to the community, but I'd like to know what you know at present about how that event is going to unfold.
The short answer is yes, we have been involved, been in conversation with the organizers of the conference. We are working on a paper submission so that we'd be presenting at the conference about this project. We also, Joe showed you images of the exhibition that we had at the Canal Museum. The intent is that that will be featured somehow in some way as part of the conference, either at the conference hotel, I'm still going to call it the Hotel Syracuse, or at the On Center. We're also working, there's a group of municipalities, we call it the Old Erie Canal Working Group, that spans Oneida County, Madison County, and Onondaga County. The last 2 years, we've hosted a ride that's called Tour of the Towpath, which has been a roughly 40-mile bike ride from Rome to DeWitt. And that ride is going to be a precursor to the Canal Conference in September of next year. And the intent is that the ride will go from Rome to DeWitt. When the riders get to DeWitt, we'll be showing them a portion of this route. I don't really think it's safe to bring them down Erie Boulevard at this point without a police escort in all seriousness. But we'll be showcasing this idea with them and then getting them safely into downtown Syracuse, and ultimately they'll end up at the Inner Harbor. So, yeah, these sorts of things are thought of. We also have set, you know, our sights on that World Canal Conference, and what we've been pushing for is to be in a position to make some kind of important announcement about closing this segment of the gap in central New York. I don't know exactly what that might be yet, Judy, but that's our goal. That is an important milestone, having that conference here, and we certainly want to take full advantage of it.
I applaud everything you're doing, and I want to see it all happen and all be beautiful. And I hate to be a killjoy, but as I recall, there's like mostly snow and cold weather in this area, and this looks like a lovely thing for Australia. So I guess I'm wondering, you know, how this transitions in wintertime. That's part one. Part two is, although I'm not on this street that often, I think it's called West Street. I shouldn't say I think it's called. It is West Street. And they constructed like this wrought iron fence kind of going through the median, maybe to deter people from walking across the road. But it seems like every time I drive down this street, part of the wrought iron fence has been crashed through by some vehicle. So, you know, part of me is concerned about safety and the cars on that street and crossing over this median, or it seems like on a lot of roads now they construct these concrete blocks to keep cars who lose control. So could you say a little bit about, you know, what are you thinking about lowering the speed limit? Is there some way to ensure the safety of the people in the center of this road? And also, how do you anticipate dealing with the long stretch of winter and snow that we get in a way that would be, you know, usable and constructive? Thanks.
So, first of all, we have shared this idea with New York State DOT. They've been great to work with, but, you know, they are a very conservative organization, and they should be, because part of their job is to protect the health and safety of the public. And they have felt comfortable with the image that we showed you before, that from a safety perspective. Part of that is that we would be reducing the number of travel lanes by one in either direction. That's going to, right now, Erie Boulevard is a raceway. If it's two lanes, if it's narrower, it's not going to be, the traffic is not going to move, not going to be able to move as quickly as it does now. So those are some of the things that go to address the safety concern. And certainly we're not going to be building, we won't build something that's not going to be safe. Remember, we both, Joe and I, have said that this is a creative process. At this point, at some point we're going to have to get real and make tough decisions. But we're still in a creative process, and I think that there's a lot of creative ways to think about how to celebrate winter as part of this. There are actually cities in North America, some of the most bike-friendly cities in North America are north of us, like in Montreal, for example, and they make it work. And you'll see people who want a bike, they do it all year round. And one of the things that we're really, really, really good at here is keeping the roads clear. Now, this won't be a road. It'll need some dedicated little plow or something like they have around the Syracuse University campus to keep the sidewalks clear. We can do this. But beyond that, there are some cool things that are happening around the world in relation to celebrating winter. So I think it's Edmonton or Calgary is creating what they call an iceway, which is it's basically a frozen strip, not unlike what we're showing in a median of a boulevard, that in the wintertime you can skate from home to work. So I think, I don't know if anybody here, I don't know if any of you have been to Ottawa for their Winterlude celebration, but that's what they do. It's cold there, and they love it. So I think I don't think that's necessarily something to shy away from. I think it's something to figure out how we embrace in a way that, again, makes this piece of infrastructure relevant to the community and something that we can use on a year-round basis.
Sam and Joe, thank you again so much for joining us today.